a renewed effort to ignite civic discussion and engagement is underway.
I really just wanted to come see what civic engagement was like in Arkansas at this time. I already have my own opinions about it, but I wanted to hear what other people had to say about it as well.
Last night's listening session on the University of Arkansas campus covered this hour on Ozarks at Large. Good Friday. It is January 31st, 2025. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large's Sophia Narani will explain what was said at that listening session last night. And a new Northwest Arkansas voice of guidance is listening to your questions.
I'm likely relating to and advising a whole group of people who have similar issues of their own, you know, flavor and variety.
We asked the person behind Ask Laura a few questions. Now, the question, what's in the news, answered by NPR.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Sonia de los Santos, Tuesday, February 11th at 7 p.m. Santos is a Latin Grammy Award winner whose newest family-friendly show, Musica, highlights women who make music and inspire her and her all-female bandmates. For tickets, waltonartscenter.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for the last day of January, Friday, January 31st, 2025. I'm Kyle Kellums. We're going to begin this show with Michael Tilley from his office in Fort Smith. Michael with Talk Business and Politics. Happy final few hours of January, Michael.
Yeah, these past 75 days of January have been pretty amazing.
Yeah, and now we've only got 115 of February to go.
Yes.
All right. Here in a minute, we're going to talk about some end-of-year sales tax numbers. But before we do that, let's talk about the confusion that exists for so many people that developed this week about federal funding for different projects. I don't think anyone, any city was left untouched or left not scratching their head.
Yes. So these stories, we could have done more, but at some point, you know, when there's so much confusion, you just kind of have to pick what are some of the highlights. But for example, this all started when President Trump issued several executive orders essentially blocking some, for example, funding that had already been approved by Congress for infrastructure. He attempted to block, of course, everybody knows Medicaid, Medicare funds, Education Department funds. I mean, a broad number of federal grants, a lot of stuff also that Congress had already passed into law. And that raises a whole separate constitutional question, which we didn't get into with our stories. But so kind of three things. You know, we talked to the highway department. There's this almost 14-mile segment of Interstate 49 between Alma and Barling, Alma, Fort Smith. Part of that's that all-important Arkansas River Bridge. Well, there's about $250 million, at least, part of federal funds directly toward that project, which is going to be a little over a billion. The highway department has said that is not in jeopardy. They think they have most of those funds in place. Although, I think state officials are kind of trying to keep quiet about some of their concerns, kind of hoping that, you know, this too shall pass kind of thing. Then we got a statement from the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith because there was a lot of confusion. I think there still is some confusion about what federal education funds are will be held harmless. You know, and I learned that they're just a little over 50 employees at the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith, whose salary is paid in full or part by federal funds. And that doesn't, you know, there are hundreds of students with full or partial scholarships that have a federal connection. So, but for now, I think what I'm hearing from that university, and it probably applies to the other universities in the state, that they think they're going to be held harmless. We talked to Congressman Womack. His take was that, you know, essentially, again, cooler heads will prevail and that, you know, funding approved by Congress will be able to go through. The city of Fort Smith, however, is not so certain. You know, there was that Bass Reeves Legacy Loop, which we just talked about a few weeks ago.
Right.
Was finally granted $25 million. There's this CPRG, this Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program, where the city's received just under $15 million, or set to receive. And then a Safe Streets Program just is $1.2 million. So just a little over $40 million in federal grant funds that, because I asked the city, you know, identify which funds you are most uncertain about, and those are the three they mentioned. And I, and unless something has changed and I don't yet know about it, those projects are, they're kind of in a holding pattern. The good news is the city has not yet, you know, engaged consultants. They haven't started construction. No real money has been spent. So if there's any good news, it's it. But it'd be a shame to not get that funding, especially for that Bass Reeves Legacy Loop, which is going to be such a big amenity for the city of Fort Smith.
And, of course, there is just this confusion. First, there was the freeze. Then we heard it was rescinded. Then we heard that only the memo was rescinded. And so there's just all sorts of limbo.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's you know, I wish I could give this person credit, but it was a consultant or political consultant said, right now, he said everything is about as clear as a Jackson Pollock painting. And so I thought that's perfect.
You were mentioning real money. Let's talk some real money. End of year sales tax figures for Fort Smith kind of went up the last part of the year, but still comparing 24 to 23 down.
Yeah, down. And now we have to remember that 2023 was a record number for sales tax revenue in the city. But the city has two primary sales tax sources. One is the city's share of the Sebastian County-wide 1% sales tax. This share received around $24.5 million, and that was just under 1% lower than last year, and it was 0.3% higher than the budget estimate. The city's 1% street tax program generated $29.5 million, and that was down 1.4% from 2023 and down just a little over 1% from the budget estimate. Now, as you noted, December did end on a positive note that the countywide tax the city street tax was up a little over 2%. The countywide tax, city street tax is up a little over 2%. Countywide tax was up 1.5% in December. So, you know, maybe that'll trend going forward. But, you know, we talked to our reporter, Tina Dale, talked to the interim city administrator, Jeff Dingman. And first of all, he's kind of patting himself. They did get close on their prediction. You know, they were pretty tight on their budget estimates. He said one issue, though, that while they're kind of proud, they're still tracking somewhat with that record 23 revenue. You know, one issue is that while the revenue is down a bit, you know, the cost to run the city continues to rise. So, you know, you create that wider margin between your plans and the money you have to manage those plans. It's the same as a household. So, and he also noted, as we've talked about, a decline in building activity is a factor in lower tax revenue. And we've, you know, talked about those building permits in 2024 being down almost 47%. Compared to 2023. I'm not saying all those building materials were bought in tax in Fort Smith, but it didn't help.
Right. Hey, the school board, Fort Smith School Board has a vacant position and, you know, a limited amount of time to fill it.
Yep. So, Talisha, the school board member, first let me say that I think it's possible that being on a school board might be one of the most thankless jobs in any community. So let's get that out there. So, but Talisha Richardson did resign recently. It was connected that the school board reassigned the Northside head football coach, Felix Curry. They reassigned him to essentially a study hall job is the best I can explain it. But, and they really didn't explain why, and it's not been very transparent. And Talisha was adamant. I mean, she was very adamant that Coach Curry was not being treated right and that he needed to be returned to his position. The other board members of the school district administration stuck by its guns. The other school board members did as well. And they didn't reassign him. So she resigned, which I think a lot of us were surprised. We knew she was, you know, again, very adamant about it, but I didn't expect a resignation. But yeah, they've got 30 days to appoint someone, or then it could go to election. And they did, you know, a few years ago, Dee Blackwell, who was the president of the school board, she resigned for health reasons, and they had someone picked within 30 days. So I expect they'll do the same here. But one last thing on this, I don't think we've heard the end of this Coach Curry matter. He's lawyered up, and it's possible something gets filed in court challenging the reassignment. So stay tuned, as they say.
Well, we can also stay tuned for the sequel to a Fort Smith Food Truck Festival. The first one last year. There will be a second.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to start fasting now to get ready for it. I didn't make it to last year's, and the primary reason is because I'm an idiot and I forgot. But there is this, the Downtown Business Association started last year with a food truck festival. They're going to announce recently they're going to do their second one this year. It's set for June 21st. And one of the things that's interesting, they say they had around 3,000, 4,000 people last year, which is a pretty healthy number for your first year. But this year they're looking for to move to another location, possibly the 800 Garrison Avenue area, because they want to double the number of food trucks they had. So they're looking to get up to around 30 food trucks. So that'll be interesting. I'm going to try not to be as stupid, and I'm going to try to attend this year. So, again, good news. I mean, it's whenever a group tries to start something, you never know, you know, if it continues. But so, you know, we're looks like we're heading to our second year.
It's going to be on June 21st. What I like is it's 10:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. You plan this right, you can have brunch, lunch, a snack, and dinner.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked to Stephanie Nugent, who the director, and she said last year there was she said several trucks ran out of ingredients, some even twice.
Oh, wow.
During the day, and had to shuffle to restock. So I think they had a good problem last year. I think it was more successful than they thought. So let's hope. I have a feeling they won't be caught as flat-footed this year, and it may even be more successful.
All right. You can read about all of this, including the Food Truck Festival, at talkbusiness.net. Michael Tilley, thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. Last night, the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute continued its series of Civic Arkansas events. The statewide objective is a multi-initiative effort to hear Arkansans' experience, thoughts, and hopes for civic engagement. Last night's listening session was on the University of Arkansas campus, and Ozarks at Large's Sophia Narani was there, and she's with me now in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome.
Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Sophia. Thanks so much for going last night. When you got there, you found out there was something a little bit different.
Yeah, there were some rules that I wasn't expecting. So it was actually pretty interesting because, you know, obviously we were talking about civic engagement and politics, which can be a bit of a tumultuous subject, kind of a hard subject for people to sit down and talk about as a group right now, which understandably makes sense.
Right.
So they actually, you know, they asked if I wouldn't record any of the session to preserve, you know, the safe space and the sanctity of the room, which totally made sense. But I was a little bit caught off guard for sure.
But you still stayed and you heard what the conversation was like. What sort of subjects came up?
Oh, it was super interesting. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to stay, and we got to talk about, you know, just the health of civic engagement in Arkansas, kind of where things are at. And it was a group of college students, and they all had the opportunity to share their thoughts on what it meant to be civically engaged, what community means to them, just kind of basic questions, getting the idea out about civic engagement, and ways that they can further participate in ways like voter registration, volunteering, all other kinds of outlets.
There were some materials that people could take home with them?
Yes, yes. So actually, I have it with me now, the 2025 Civic Commitments Calendar, which is a super interesting pamphlet that Civic Arkansas put together, talking a bit about ways that anybody can participate, you know, and help out with their local government throughout the month or throughout the year of 2025. So actually next month, they're highlighting civic spaces, and they're asking, and it's pretty basic things, pretty easy questions, pretty easy things that you can do, like show appreciation and support for a school board member by writing a letter of appreciation, or grabbing a meal or a cup of coffee at a local business, using public transit to connect with maybe overlooked people and activities through observation, conversation, pretty broad things that you can probably get done on your in your day-to-day that, you know, just make you feel like you're more civically engaged and you're part of that community.
All right, you have a physical copy.
Yes.
Not everybody, of course, was there last night. Is there a place where we can get this material?
Yes, there's a there is a physical copy that they have, and there is also an online copy on the Winthrop Rockefeller website where people can find throughout the year all of the information that they need to be civically engaged.
Conversation last night was about civic engagement. Was it a civil hour?
Yes. Oh, you know, it was actually really nice. Definitely a safe space was the right word for it. And everyone felt like they were able to talk about, you know, their interactions with political conversations in public, with their friends and family, and on social media as well, which was a really interesting topic, kind of talking about how the college student generation maybe interacts with political content and social media a bit differently than other generations do. And a lot of really, you know, further interesting information on the civil health index that the group provided.
They asked not to record, but afterward you did talk to a couple of students that participated.
Yes, I had the opportunity to talk with a couple of amazing students that were actually interested in becoming public servants themselves and wanting to further their knowledge in civic engagement. Weren't actually there just for the extra credit, so that was pretty nice to hear. And it was encouraging, too, just knowing that there are so many young people interested in making sure that everyone feels like they have a voice.
I'm Sophie Simmons. I'm from Rector, Arkansas, in the northeast corner, and I'm a senior. I knew about the Winthrop Rockefeller Center through Miss America Peyton Bowling, and I also work at the Pryor Center, where Dr. Davis is the director, and he's also my professor. And I didn't really know about the extra credit until I got here, but I really just wanted to come see what civic engagement was like in Arkansas at this time. I already have my own opinions about it, but I wanted to hear what other people had to say about it as well. I also really liked going around and doing the note cards on the boards, just answering questions, especially about local government. We both are from rural areas, so being able to hear from a local perspective and other people from areas similar to ours was really insightful. Just so we know we're not alone in our thoughts about local government, state government.
All right, so she was from Rector, which is in the northeast part of the state, a very small town.
Mm-hmm.
And the other student you talked to was also from a small town, this on the other side of the state.
I'm Katie Gage. I'm from Charleston, Arkansas, which is about 30 minutes east of Fort Smith. I think looking at the statistics, it gives me hope knowing that a lot of Arkansans find that community with their friends and family, but we have a lot of work to do in terms of civic engagement, voter turnout, volunteering, all sorts of things. So we have a good foundation started, but there's a lot of work that needs to continue to be done, and I'm glad to be a part of the generation that can hopefully make that change in Arkansas.
Anything else that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I think just the main thing that stuck out the most to me was the fact that, you know, something that was stressed was Arkansas has the lowest voter registration in the entire country.
Not just voter participation, but
registration. Yep. So that's, you know, there are a lot of issues there and a lot of barriers there. And I think, you know, we had an opportunity as a group. I wasn't participating in the discussion, but I got a chance to listen. And as a group, they were discussing ways to go over those barriers, ways to solve some of the issues that are causing that lack of engagement, lack of registration. And it was just encouraging, and it was hopeful, and, you know, that you don't hear that often in political conversations these days, so.
You're right. Ozarks at Large's Sophia Narani at last night's listening session on the University of Arkansas campus. It's part of the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute's Civic Arkansas Project. Sophia, thanks for going. Thanks for being here today.
Of course. Thanks, Kyle.
Just a few years after creating the British funk outfit Simande, its founders went in another direction. I met a lot of lawyers who'd like to be big music stars, but never the other way around. What were you thinking?
It's backward thinking, actually.
4 decades on, they're back. Find out why. Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
You can hear Weekend Edition tomorrow morning, beginning at 7. The 2024 Nation's report card shows math and reading skills for students in Arkansas remained nearly unchanged from 2022 to 2024. The report was released Wednesday. Federal data from the National Assessment of Educational Progress in Math and Reading compiles a sample of 4th and 8th graders from each state to measure national learning progress. A random sample of 3,600 4th graders and 3,600 8th graders from 196 public schools in Arkansas took the assessment this time last year. According to the information, Arkansas students' scores fell below the national average in every category, but were statistically the same compared to the previous report card. Nationally, average math scores rose slightly, while reading scores dropped by 2 points for both grades. Both math and reading scores are below their pre-pandemic averages. Full report available at nationsreportcard.gov. Lawmakers in Little Rock discussed a bill to ban cryptocurrency mines within 30 miles of 5 military facilities this week. Senate Bill 60 is sponsored by Republican Senator Ricky Hill of Cabot. He told the Senate Committee on County and Local Affairs he wants to protect the military.
As artificial intelligence continues to improve daily, we've got a lot of issues out here that we're uncertain about. And just trying to alleviate something from happening that could possibly happen to our veterans who are out here serving this country, putting themselves in danger every day.
So we're uncertain of what those threats are.
It's always an uncertainty on any threat.
The question came from Senator Joshua Bryant. Bryant also voiced concern over part of the bill instructing all data centers currently or planned within the 30-mile radius to cease operations unless the centers obtained a permit to do so by December of last year.
Oil and gas has not finished the promulgation of rules to even issue permits. Do you find that we're kind of opening ourselves up to liability, saying you can operate if you have a license that does not yet exist?
Senator Hill replied the Oil and Gas Commission should, quote, do their job, and repeated his desire to protect the military. The bill failed to pass the committee on a roll call vote.
You're listening to Adolf Hoffner and his San Antonians, and you're on the Soundbeat. Sports fans who recognize this tune might be cringing.
Oh, that got Nigel.
A 1994 version by Swedish band Rednecks, yes, that's Rednecks with an X, has become a modern-day arena anthem. To some, it's probably a real toe-tapper, and to others, it's as welcome to the ears as the vuvuzela. Ugh. The original song propagated through both the United States and Canadian folk traditions, predating the American Civil War. Hoffner and his San Antonians made this, the most popular recording of the tune, in 1941. Hoffner was a pioneer of Western swing, a blend of jazz, polka, folk, and blues that would become, in effect, country music. For more on the man, and to listen to more episodes, check out soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
This is Ozarks at Large. This month, the Fayetteville Flyer launched a new advice column with a familiar writer, Laura Hobbs, who many people remember as a writer of the Flyer Foodie, which ran from 2009 to 2013, is returning to the publication as the Dear Laura columnist. Hobbs, who now lives in Boulder, Colorado, spoke with Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth last week about this new venture. She says returning to the Flyer has been in the back of her mind ever since her food column wrapped more than a decade ago.
And it was really great. It was a wonderful creative outlet for me. It connected me to the community, and it gained somewhat of a cult following within its 3 or so years. And also, for as long as I can remember, I have been an avid advice column reader. Growing up, I always remember looking forward to two things in the paper, the comics and the Dear Abby advice column. And I loved how relatable people's questions were, and also how empathetic and helpful the answers were. And along with an early interest in psychology and therapy, all of these things kind of came together and played into my lifelong dream of becoming a therapist. So I went back to school to get my master's in clinical mental health counseling. So as I finished grad school and my new career as a therapist took shape over the last couple of years, I found myself wanting to reconnect with a creative outlet. And writing has always been that for me. And so I brought all of these things together, my love of advice columns, my career as a therapist, my stint as the Flyer foodie with the Fayetteville Flyer, and my love for creative writing. And late last year, I pitched my advice column idea to Todd Gill, who's the editor and a co-founder of the Fayetteville Flyer, and he's also been a dear, dear friend of mine for the last 25 years. And Todd was receptive to the idea of me returning to the Flyer as an advice columnist. And I pitched the idea back in November, and he and I have been quietly putting it together since then. And the column, Dear Laura, launched just late last week.
And so in deciding to do an advice column, I mean, it makes sense with your background mm-hmm. and everything. But is there any, just the approach of having done the Flyer foodie column to now doing an advice column, does it feel like, is it different? Does it feel like there's a shift? How are you approaching that maybe differently than the previous column?
Oh, sure. I do have a different approach because, of course, I am giving advice to people rather than giving recipes to people. I think back on the Flyer foodie with such fondness and nostalgia, and it was really representative of who I was in that era of my life. Now it's 15 years later, and a lot has changed and a lot has stayed the same. I'm still a writer at heart. Being a writer for the Fayetteville Flyer also gives me a sense of connection to Fayetteville. You know, I'm from Fayetteville. I lived there for 30 years. My parents still live there. Some of my oldest and dearest friends still live there. And it will always have a place in my heart. And so writing a column for the Fayetteville Flyer just feels like a connection to home for me.
Yeah. And so I know you guys, you launched it last week. Have you started mm-hmm. already hearing from people? What kind of things are coming in, or have you had anything come in yet?
Absolutely. So the first submission actually touched on something that gives me a real sense of imposter syndrome. And that is offering advice to someone who is older than I am. I think to myself, like, who am I to be offering advice and guidance to someone who is already wise and to someone who has already lived more life than I have? But the first column addresses a 65-year-old woman who's entering a new era of her life and looking for guidance on whether to mend old friendships or to move on from them. And as I wrote this response, I realized that valuable guidance and advice is valuable guidance and advice. And just because I'm younger doesn't mean I'm unqualified. And something else that plays into my former career of being in digital marketing and social media is that I am really interested in providing insight and giving advice on how the therapy world and this movement toward mental health is influencing the content that's on social media. And what that means for media consumption and content consumption, and what to embrace and what to be wary of. And in fact, I have another submission that I'm going to address in an upcoming column. And this writer wants advice around watching TikTok videos and essentially diagnosing herself with ADHD from TikTok content, and whether that's a real diagnosis and something she should address, and what to do about it. So those are some things that I am interested in tackling.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing, too, is, I mean, just the manner of advice that people are seeking maybe is different or changing, like with technology. But I'm sure a lot of those, the core advice there and the guidance people are looking for is probably mm-hmm. is probably the same, or probably a core thing. So I'm wondering if there are particular conundrums or like topics that you're interested in covering, excited about, or some that you, like you were saying, are nervous to tackle or not sure about.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And you are so right, because in my work with clients in my therapy practice, I find that while each person's problems are unique to them, they often fall into some pretty basic mental health categories: depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, fear of abandonment, grief and loss, trauma. I'm just naming a few here. And what that means for my column is that by relating to and offering advice to this one person, I'm likely relating to and advising a whole group of people who have similar issues of their own, you know, flavor and variety. And by doing this, I think that creates a sense of connection and relatability to others. And it really reminds people that they are not alone in their struggles. So as I write my advice, I know I'm going to be hearing a lot of these kind of basic mental health categories, and I will tailor it to the writer's question specifically, while also addressing the broader themes that will likely resonate with a wider audience.
And so, you know, you've talked a little bit about your experience of giving advice and working in this field before, mm-hmm. And your love of advice columns. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular columnist, or even if it's not a directly like newspaper advice column, or just someone who you take inspiration from or inspired by? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. I take inspiration from a number of other advice columnists. I adore Philip Galanis. He does the Social Cues column with the New York Times. I love Lori Gottlieb. She wrote the Dear Therapist column with the Atlantic for a number of years, and she recently moved over to the New York Times. I am a total Esther Perel disciple. I have read her books. I have listened to her podcast, Where Should We Begin? Cheryl Strayed's column from the early aughts called Dear Sugar is so inspiring and visceral and just really well written. And I think the last one is a podcast called Ask Rana. It's a comedy podcast with Jessica Chaffin and Brian Safi. And while it's a comedy podcast and they are sort of in character, they offer some really good and poignant advice. So I take from all of those in giving advice to my readers at Dear Laura.
And what do you think makes a good advice column?
Yeah, great question. In my case, I think a good advice column strikes a balance between maintaining my professional identity as a therapist while also staying human, staying authentic and relatable, approachable, using warmth and humor when that's needed, and also using poignancy or straightforwardness when that's warranted too. And the tone of it is very important. In my writing, I tend to have this very unusual mix of like deep and profound metaphor alongside lighthearted conversation, which is reflective of my personality and the way I talk and the way that I engage in therapy with clients and the way I present myself in the world. I think it's also important to listen to what the writer is telling me. And I don't mean just what they have written in their email. I mean to read between the lines, to pick up on subtle cues within the letter, and to hear what they're not saying. All of that is equally valuable information. And so I'm asking myself, what is this person actually telling me in their letter? What are they actually asking for? And what's the most helpful thing that I can say to this person? And I always want to avoid framing advice as telling someone what you're doing is wrong and this is how to do it right, because I'm not here to do that. I'm here to be more of a guide and a co-pilot alongside the writer rather than an advisor to them. Yeah.
And so we've talked about a lot of those other advice columns that exist, and there's so many out there. And, mm-hmm. and why is it important or necessary to have like a local version of that? Why have a local column? What makes that special?
I have wondered this too as I have ventured into Dear Laura, because there is maybe an insecure part of me going, oh no, this is a small town. Are people going to write in? Because people are going to know who other people are when they read this. And so that is a risk I am willing to take in doing the Dear Laura column. But I think it's important for a community to realize that no matter how big or small it is, there is likely someone out there who is dealing with a struggle that is similar to yours. And having connection and relatability to that, and to be able to read about somebody's experience and kind of compare and contrast it to your own, and be able to have that relatability with someone else, is really important. I think that infusing the flyer with some content that is less news-oriented and maybe slower and more contemplative and more reflective brings value not only to the flyer but to the community.
Are there any pieces of advice or any issues that you think will come up that are like Fayetteville-centric that you're like, oh my gosh, this is the most Fayetteville thing I've ever heard? Have you heard any of that yet, or do you anticipate any of it?
You know, I have wondered that myself. So far, I haven't heard anything that is Fayetteville-specific. But I imagine that the people in Fayetteville are going to be dealing with problems that people everywhere are dealing with. I mean, it's stress management, it's family dynamics, it's relationships and friendship issues, big life transitions like losing a job, going through a divorce. I think especially some of these things that I'm pulling out, like friendship issues or big life transitions, stress management, all of that can be related to life at the U of A. I know that was part of my experience at the U of A, was dealing with all of those things. But I will say that being a Fayettevillian myself and having lived there for 30 years, I think I'm qualified to address anything that comes my way having to do with Fayetteville.
Yeah. And that kind of brings up another thing is, you know, I'm sure you'll get several letters that come in within a week. How do you go about deciding which issue you're going to address?
With the submissions that I have received so far, of course, something that is relatable, well-written, thought-provoking, that's definitely something that's going to make it into the column. But also, I think simple questions will also be really great content, because maybe someone isn't interested in this deep or long, drawn-out problem. Somebody just wants to hear advice on stress management or how to make friends or something like that.
Finally, I mean, the flyer is going through kind of a big change, or, you know, they're enhancing a lot at the moment. It's a pretty exciting time to work there, I would imagine. What about joining this team again is exciting for you? And what are you kind of looking forward to being part of that group again?
Oh, gosh. Like I said earlier, my time at the Flyer is just so near and dear to my heart. It is very nostalgic to me. And I just think of it with such fondness. Because not only is the Flyer representative of my hometown and the news that happens with my hometown, it's also representative of friendships that I have kept over the last 2+ decades. I am near and dear friends with both Todd and Dustin, the founders of the Flyer. And by maintaining my connection with them and by maintaining our friendships, I think this makes my comeback to the Flyer more natural than ever. And it just feels like it's a natural fit just because of where I'm from, where I come from, my friendships with the founders of the Flyer, and my desire to be back.
And so when can people be on the lookout for the new columns? When do they come out? What do we need to look out for?
So the column is, it launched in late January, and it's going to be every other week for the time being. We're all going to see how it goes for a while if we can keep up with every other week content. It may go down to once a month. We're not really sure yet, but for now, expect it every other Thursday or Friday.
Laura Hobbs speaking with Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth. Her column, Dear Laura, runs at the Fayetteville Flyer every other Thursday. Daniel conducts his interviews inside the Karen Taha News Studio.
This is Clint Schaff, General Manager at KUAF. We're back on the road for the 2025 Community Coffee Tour. Grab a cup on us Tuesday, February 4th at Cafe 211 inside the Bentonville Public Library. You'll meet with the KUAF team, learn about upcoming events, and have an opportunity to share stories, ideas, or tips with the news team. You might even get the chance to hear yourself on the radio. The KUAF Coffee Tour, Tuesday, February 4th, from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Bentonville Public Library. For more, kuaf.com/coffee tour.
It's the last day of January. Here to help us ring out a month is April Wallace, who is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Hello.
Hello. Happy almost February.
Oh my gosh. January is finally ending. It is the longest month of the year.
See, I think February is longer.
How so?
I don't know. It's just more winter.
And we're already tired of winter. So.
Right. January and February to me have always seemed like 158 or 59.
That explains it.
I call it the gray 59.
Oh, yes. Well, see, you know, I have a countdown to daylight saving time right now.
Mm-hmm.
39 days, people.
There you go. But we got to do stuff between now and then.
Yeah, and Bentonville has plenty in store. Starting with Send It South, which is a 3-day bike and music festival, which, you know, they're used to combining bikes with whatever, but
right.
I did see this, I have to say, kind of in action with the former Format Festival.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people around there would just ride their bikes to Format, right?
Sure.
And there was like a bike valley. Anyway, Send It South is different. It's a 3-day festival, February 7th through 9th. Presented by The Momentary and Oz Trails. They will have, it's going to be a spectacle on two wheels, they say. Food, fire, pop-ups, and more, of course. Live music will include sets by Will Dorado, Dirtwire, Bonnie Montgomery.
Oh, I love her.
The band Stepmom, which is art punk. It's really cute. Well, that's my word. They probably don't want to be described as cute, but I love it.
Yes.
And DJs Dubalicious and Two Wheels Productions. So they'll have like art rides, night rides, guided group rides, but you can do guided or self-guided, either one. Also coming up, of course, Valentine's Day is on the horizon now, and there are going to be like interactive love song workshops at the Folk School of Fayetteville very soon. This is from Lyle and Sarah Sparkman, a father-daughter duo. They are sharing a collection of Ozark songs that are very important to them. He's a longtime educator, and he grew up with these traditional folk songs. And he didn't realize I think at first as a kid, he didn't realize how far back they went.
Mm-hmm.
And until he started studying music in late high school and realized, hey, I know that song. We sing that at home. So he and his daughter are going to teach others these old traditional Ozark folk songs.
And they live here in this area?
They do. They are 7th and 8th generation Ozarkers.
Wow, okay.
So these are handed down from centuries past, he said. And by engaging in this type of music, you are preserving them as well. So this will be February 8th, starting at 1 p.m. They will have lovers' laments, sweetness, and historical details like arranged marriages, elopements. But when you come to this, they'll give you like a word sheet, and you can record the songs if you'd like to take them
that.
And go sing them later. But they say, please leave your instrument at home.
Okay.
Please sing, but please don't play. Now, what do four Southern ladies, cocktails, and a desire for a second shot in life have in common?
I don't know.
Apparently, the Savannah Sipping Society.
Oh.
At Fort Smith Little Theater.
Okay.
So this is a farce. It will launch the 2025 season with themes of love, resilience, and newfound friendships. Dustin Stagg says this is the perfect way to celebrate Valentine's Day because it has nothing to do with whether you are coupled or single. It's just a funny show based on these women's friendships and highly enjoyable, he says. Opening night is February 13th, but they'll have performances the 14th, 15th, 19th through 22nd, and there is a matinee in there somewhere. Opening night is $20, but all others are $13.
Okay.
King Opera House has plenty of activities coming up. A couple of them are a comedy show by Jeff Leeson on, well, tonight, actually, $25 to $35.
All right. This is in Van Buren.
Yes. And there is a $5 Disney movie night to see Beauty and the Beast on February 13th. One final thing, the Van Cliburn concerts have been announced.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to them.
I'm looking forward to hearing how some of these names are pronounced, because the press release did not include pronouncers.
I did not practice,
okay.
Kyle.
All right.
But the first one's last name is Zhang.
Very good. Very good.
Haochen Zhang, I believe, opens the series February 21st. So this is just, you know, put it on your calendar. You don't want to miss these. He is the youngest of the Van Cliburn Gold winners,
mm-hmm.
and has captivated audiences in the U.S., Europe, and Asia with a combination of deep musical sensitivity, fearless imagination, and spectacular virtuosity. The series will continue with American pianist Clayton Stevenson on September 5th, so that's a ways away.
Right.
But he's described as a poet, a dramatist, and a master storyteller, and he was the first Black finalist at Van Cliburn International Piano Competition. So, as we've talked about before, these are just the most amazing pianists in the world.
Right.
So,
a chance to see them very close.
Right.
Yeah.
And closing the series is Grammy Award-winning pianist Yefim Bronfman. And the acclaimed and admired pianist has been nominated for 6 Grammy Awards. And that's for his recording of 3 Bartok concertos.
Oh, okay.
So all concerts begin at 7 p.m. The individual tickets are $45 or $36 for members. And if, like I'm considering, you just want them all, it's like $115 for all of them, for like a season pass.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty inexpensive.
I think so.
Oh, it's very inexpensive, actually.
Yeah, when you divide it out, yeah.
You know, we started this conversation talking about bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think, if you did everything that you just mentioned, you would be much like a bicycle. You'd be too tired. April Wallace is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle.
It's Friday. Let's check in with our film critic, Courtney Lanning, to find out whether Courtney liked the movie Love Me or Not. Courtney, welcome back to the program.
Kyle, thank you for having me.
All right. I got to say, I at least like the minimalist title, Love Me. That's, you know, 6 letters.
It is. And the concept is really interesting. The title is short. The concept is easy to understand. This is the story of after humanity is extinct, you have a buoy floating in the water with artificial intelligence. And you have a satellite orbiting the planet with artificial intelligence, and they fall in love.
Oh, okay. I like that concept. Do they pull it off?
Me too. I like the concept. This is kind of like a slightly different take on WALL-E, if
right.
you think about it. But where WALL-E had a lot of interesting character to the world and good writing, Love Me is an interesting concept that is just stretched too thin, Kyle. It drags really hard in the middle of the movie, and it loses whatever little momentum it had. This should have been a short film, a conceptual short film that would have been a nice, neat, wrapped up story in 20 to 30 minutes. And unfortunately, at 90 minutes, this film feels like a 6-hour miniseries.
Ooh, not good. Anything besides the concept work here?
So look, the little buoy is played by Kristen Stewart and the orbiting satellite is played by Steven Yeun. And they have good chemistry. They work well together on screen. They're giving it their all. They're not phoning it in. This is clearly a movie that they are really putting their all into. The problem is they're just not given anything to work with. It's It's kind of like if you go in expecting a big hearty stew and you're just given a bowl of broth. There's just, it needs some more to it to call it a feature-length film. There's not much they can work with.
It's animated or it's computer-generated.
So you could basically break this movie down into three parts. The first third, it, again, the even 90 minutes, the first 30 minutes is mostly just the buoy and just the satellite. Live action or computer generated to look like live action. Mm-hmm. The middle third, the part that really drags, each of them sort of design little avatars for themselves. So they have like animated bodies, kind of like you'd see in a game like The Sims or on an Xbox, you have your little animated avatars. That's the part that drags the most. The final third has them sort of evolve their world to where they are Stephen Yeun and Kristen Stewart on screen as themselves.
Oh, okay.
And it picks up a little bit, but the problem is I was so dulled and tempted to turn off the movie through the middle part that by the time we got to the interesting bit at the end, there wasn't much left for me to enjoy.
What about the elements that surround the picture? I don't know, the cinematography or the editing or the music.
I hate to be a Debbie Downer, Kyle. Even the musical score frustrated me. Because this was a movie that did not know how to use silence to its advantage. You would think that in a movie that is humans are gone, nature is dead, and it's just these two machines left over a billion years later that are trying to figure out love and existence, that they would learn how to use silence. Mm. Let the audience breathe and absorb tender, heartfelt moments, either after a big fight or when a concept of me is discovered. But the movie doesn't even give you that because in just about every single second, there's some kind of solo piano track in the background. It was almost like the movie was scared to let you sit in the silence. Or the movie knew it didn't have enough to offer, so it thought, I'll just put in a lot of generic, soft instrumental music in the background and that'll make it better. And it didn't, Kyle. It almost made me feel more claustrophobic in the fact that there was just music every single scene.
All right, so we agree it's an interesting concept and it's somewhat existential. Take out that boring middle third. Did it leave you at all at the end thinking, well, I've got something more to think about in the wake of the ending?
I wish it could have, but the building blocks that this foundation has made up just weren't sturdy enough to hold up any of these conceptual ideas. It's kind of like watching a game of The Sims play itself. These machines have to figure out personhood and identity and purpose and visualization. And it's just kind of like watching a toaster learn how to come alive and be a human being. It didn't hold my interest to do that.
Wasn't there an animated movie, The Brave Little Toaster? Maybe that's what
there was.
Yes, yes.
In fact, I would encourage you to watch The Brave Little Toaster instead of Love Me. If you can find it somewhere on a VHS or streaming.
Very good. All right. Well, you didn't, shorthand, you didn't love Me. We'll try again next time. How's that?
I would love to try again next time.
Courtney Lanning, thank you so much.
Kyle, thanks for having me.
Every day and every story needs a strong start. Make Morning Edition from NPR News the first chapter to your story. Listen weekdays for reporting and analysis from around the world.
Morning Edition, every weekday morning from 5 until 9. A reminder, Monday night, the Washington County Quorum Court will vote on the Freedom and Property Preservation Zoning Act. You may remember previous reporting on this ordinance on our program from Ozarks at Large's Jack Travis. You can read the proposed legislation on the planning section of Washington County's website. Just go to the Ordinances and Regulations tab.
Howdy, folks. This is Dave Smith, host of Ozark Highlands Radio. This week we'll be hearing national champion hammer dulcimer player Ted Yoder. Our producer Jeff Glover dusts off an archival recording of another hammer-wielding musician, Joe Jewell. And our friend Brooks Blevins profiles notable Ozark woodcarver Junior Cobb. That's this week on Ozark Highlands Radio.
Ozark Highlands Radio, tomorrow evening beginning at 6. Contributors to our program today included Sophia Narani, Daniel Carruth, Jack Travis, Michael Tilley, April Wallace, and Courtney Lanning. Ozarks at Large, a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today's show put together in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Have a great weekend.
The Walmart Amp presents Tedeschi Trucks Band with special guest Buddy Guy Monday, May 12th. This American blues rock group is led by Derek Trucks and his wife, vocalist Susan Tedeschi. Tickets on sale this Friday, January 31st at 10 a.m. at amptickets.com.